Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the UConn Hockey Podcast. On today's episode, I'm joined by a very special guest. The captain of the UConn men's hockey team, Hudson Shandord, joins the podcast today. Hudson has 64 points in his UConn hockey career so far and also helped the team to a Hockey East championship appearance during his sophomore year. Hudson, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and coming on the podcast. And how's everything going?
Yeah, awesome. Thanks so much for having me, Matthew. It's a real privilege to be on here, and it's going good. It's almost that time again, right? You can kind of feel it in the air. It's getting a little brisk out here on the West Coast, so it's about time to get back in the rink and start going to war with the men again. So it's exciting. Exciting to be back at school soon.
Yeah, obviously, I know that you head back on Wednesday. So, but what's your off season been like this summer, and what have you done anything interesting, whether it's been hockey related or not?
Yeah, no, it's been great. I work out with this guy, Ryan Kerr, RK4 Development, 5 times a week during the summer, who's been huge in my development kind of as a player, but also as a person too. He trains you to be a really good human and as well as a great athlete at the same time. So that's kind of a staple I always look forward to when I come home, and you try and mix in some fun too. There's a beautiful spot about an hour away from here called Whistler, and I'd recommend anyone go and see it. It's beautiful. Two massive mountains for skiing, mountain biking, beautiful lakes to relax by too during the day. So had a nice weekend up there a couple of weeks ago. And but now it's that time. Start looking forward to season and getting locked in. But we had some fun this summer and a lot of hard work too.
Yeah, I saw that a bunch of other UConn guys train with Ryan. I know that Carter Berger was with him. I think Matthew Wood worked with him a little bit as well. And obviously Connor Bedard, most notably, is also one of his guys. What's it like working with other high-end athletes like some of your teammates and like Bedard during the summer? Does that make you better as well going against those guys in training?
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head. Absolutely, it does. You know, I think the reason that all of us have kind of got to where we are is because of the natural competitiveness that we all have. So I think that does trickle into the gym a little bit, and we all push each other pretty strong. But all those guys, though we do have some competitive moments, they're all really great, humble people. Like, I couldn't say enough about the whole group we have in the gym in general. Is just super stellar all around. You know, they're all guys that I would want on my team or a part of my company and in my foxhole, if you would, instead of in the other one. So it's always fun coming back in the summer and working with those guys.
Now, what did your offseason training look like, and what are some things that you wanted to sort of work on for the upcoming season?
You know, a big thing for me this summer was kind of redefining my stride almost. I think, you know, I was missing out on being a little bit more efficient. So I had the opportunity to work with a physiotherapist named Sean Campbell, who is really expertise is in hockey and being efficient skater, not only a powerful one, but efficient at the same time. So I think, you know, I had some time to work with him and Ryan as a team to allow me to kind of lengthen my stride and get some more power quickly, but also in a more efficient manner. So that was kind of a big focus for me. And off the ice, on the ice specifically more, it would have to be probably my shot, shooting from distance a little bit. I wanted to work on angle changing. I know that's so big in today's game. That just translates so well through every level, is kind of being able to shoot through defenders, around defenders, and really make the goalie work and see pucks and battle through screens. So those were kind of two big keys for me that I was working with all offseason with some unbelievable people around me.
Now, one thing I noticed about your game last year was you did a good job sort of playing different roles in the forward group. I know your sophomore year, you primarily were on the wing, but it seemed like during your junior year, you played more center and had to work on your faceoffs and be more two-way player. How did you sort of work on that part of your game during the summer?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm very fortunate that naturally I can kind of play almost anywhere. I think if you ask kind of most of the coaches that I've played for, whether in juniors or Coach Cav, they would say that they would trust me to kind of play either on the wing or down the middle. And I've played both growing up countless times. So I didn't have to make any huge adjustments. Of course, when you get to college, the guys on the dot are a little bit stronger than the guys in juniors. So that's something that we're going to have to work on a little bit more next year too, just to become that really elite two-way centerman that I aspire to be. So that's kind of the one key I would say next year, is if I can become a really stellar player on the faceoff dot, I think that'll just kind of help everything, whether that's, you know, getting possession right off it, or kind of killing another centerman's confidence also, that can play a role in faceoffs too. So we're going to work with that. I know Mike Finnegan did a really good job pre-scouting the centerman last year. So we're going to go back with him and hit the drawing board. And hopefully we can, as a full group, improve our percentage overall.
Do you ever try to ask your teammates about some of the strategies they do? Because I know Jakob was really good in the faceoff circle. I'm curious if you ever talked to guys like him or some of your current teammates, because I know Samu did a really good job as a freshman in the dot to sort of improve that area of your game.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, that's why you have teammates and guys on your team. You know, if somebody's having a great day on the dot, typically there's a reason behind it. They're doing something that you're not doing. And I know everyone kind of has their own little things that they do on the dot, which is what makes faceoffs kind of such a cool part of the game. But yeah, Jakob was great. Actually, he taught me a couple really good moves where, you know, he's like, he was a huge guy, right? 6'4". He's like, I hate going against little guys like you on the dot, because you guys can get way lower and you do these little moves on me. So there was a couple things that, you know, he showed me. I'm not going to put any secrets out there into the world for this.
Oh, episode. Please don't. I don't want any opponents listening to this and getting any ideas. So
yeah, no, but Jakob was such a great leader to us too. He taught us so many things, but faceoffs were definitely something that he helped me out on a lot for sure.
Now, you were named one of the team captains back in May. So my question is, what type of leadership do you want to bring to the team compared to last season? And would you consider yourself more of a vocal leader or lead by example type of player?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, I think it's hard to kind of replicate what Roman was able to do for us last year, just being around the program for such a long time and having such a strong veteran presence that he had. I think he did an awesome job kind of for our team. Having such a young team around him, he really got us all to kind of buy in right from day one, which is why we started so well. So I'm just going to try and build off of him. You know, I'm a very positive, uplifting person, I like to say. And I like to think kids can rely on me if something's not going right. You know, the sun's going to still rise the next morning. I say that all the time. So just kind of bring a lot of positivity to the room, you know, just believing in everyone, having confidence in everyone is kind of what I try to do. I would definitely say I have a vocal aspect to my leadership, but I like to think I also can back it up on the ice as well and lead by example at the same time. So I don't know if there's one specifically out of the two that I do more than the other, but it's kind of I try and combine both together almost and find that nice combination of not being overly vocal or only relying on your play to do the talking.
You'd ever talk to other captains about that? Like, does Harrison be more vocal one day and you're sort of the lead by example and it sort of switches up throughout each practice or game?
Yeah, I don't know if there's necessarily switches, but I feel like some guys are kind of just naturally lead by example guys, and other guys are more naturally vocal leaders. I don't know if we have the quite exact dynamic for our leadership group this year. I know we'll be adding another assistant captain kind of come into training camp and see how that plays out, which is always interesting. And we'll kind of figure it out usually after there. It's weird how it just naturally kind of happens over the course of the season. So we'll see. I'm excited. I'm super excited to have Flinny and Harry beside me, two guys who have obviously been around just like Roman had. And yeah, a lot of positivity coming from those guys too. It'll be really exciting.
Now, I'm genuinely curious because I'm not sure what the NCAA rules are like, but when do you guys actually officially start practicing and sort of what type of drills do you guys work on in September and early October before the season begins?
Yeah, I think I think you have to have 2 weeks before you can officially practice as a team, where it's like a month out of your season. Don't quote me on that, but I believe that's kind of what it is along those lines. Typically it's kind of, well, it changes every year, to be honest. The first year I was here, we had a kind of a new mix of young and old guys, so we had to relearn a lot of the systems. And last year was a full new team almost, right? So we had to really go back to the drawing board and learn everything from day one, because the way we play is a lot different than a lot of guys have played in the past. So it does take a little bit of time. It does, to kind of fully learn and embrace our systems and find the little nuances here and there that really can separate us from other teams. Moving into next year, we have a lot of guys coming back. You know, we have a lot of guys to rely on too coming back, and we might be able to move into some more advanced things kind of right away. You know, once the new guys who are all great guys and seem like very intelligent hockey players can catch up and tag right along, that might be able to help us a lot down the line, kind of being able to work on some more advanced things right away.
Now, what are your team's goals and expectations for next season? I assume it's to finally make your first NCAA appearance. And are there things that you guys did well last season that you sort of want to build on this year? And are there things that you believe you guys really need to improve on for next season when you sort of think about last year and some of the things your team did well and did not do well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that goal is always in mind. You want to go to that tournament. And I think we've been very unlucky the last 2 years to not get in. We've been so close both times, which is really frustrating. So I think everyone who's been on the team during these last 2 years kind of just has that in the back of their mind all the time, all summer, that, we want to go to the dance. Like, let's see, let's get there and see what happens. We just saw what Quinnipiac did. We had a great game with them. Arguably should have won, like, close, super close, either way game. They had an unbelievable team, but it's like we're right there. We can play with those guys. So that's definitely a goal, and not only to get there, but to succeed at the tournament and win at the tournament, because I know we can. I've seen, we played teams that succeed and win at this tournament, and teams that we've beaten or been right there with the entire time. So it's definitely not only get to the tournament, but have success in the tournament is kind of what's going through a lot of our minds right now. In terms of building off of things from last year, I think during that second half of the year, we really started to kind of move into some more advanced offensive zone kind of mechanics as a team. And I think it really benefited us kind of down the stretch. We were able to put up some big goal numbers kind of just through these little nuances that were getting taught to us kind of in February and January, which we didn't really have at the start of the year. So kind of those definitely helped. And, we got to keep whatever we did exactly and keep moving on with that. And, I think when we had really good success as a team here, it does come from our defense. It does. We play a really tough D zone to play against that can be smothering and swarming at times. And I think a lot of our offense actually gets generated from that. So really getting back to that and make sure everyone's on the same page about playing defense hard in the right way, I think will help elevate everything in our game.
Yeah, and I just sort of want to follow up a little bit more on that. Was there some things in the second half that you think your team needs to get better at? Because at least from my perspective, it felt like there were games, like for example, you guys lost a really tough overtime game against New Hampshire where it was very back and forth. But then the next game when you played against them, you blew them out. I'm curious if you sort of look at certain games like that and sort of like maybe we can improve on this sort of thing so we can be a little more consistent, especially in the second half of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think, also UNH was a great team down the stretch. That second half of last year, I think, if you take out their first half, they were one of the top three teams in Hockey East in terms of records down the stretch. So, I don't know if we were quite as prepared as we should have been for that team. Every time you go up to UNH, they're going to give you a hard game. Once they shrunk that ice down, they have a great fan base behind them. They always come to play there. So I think with such a young team, we maybe weren't as ready as we needed to be for that game. But definitely when you look at, how can you go from that to winning? I can't remember what the score was, but it was put up a huge number of
6-1.
goals. Yeah, 6-1. I think that game was kind of, Coach Cav always says offense is like cats. You call for them and you don't know. They might come, they might not, but defense is dogs. When your dog will always come, when it comes. So it's, I think relying on that defense, like I said earlier, and making sure that that's there every single night, because you can't necessarily control everything in a game, right? We play on an ice sheet with a little rubber, puck. Like, this thing is, it's impossible to control everything offensively, but you can control a lot defensively in terms of work ethic, positioning, and all of that. So I think really leaning on that this year is going to be a key for us.
Yeah, I always love a good Coach Cav metaphor. He always has one in each press
Always,
conference. So,
always does, yeah.
what's it like playing in Hockey East? Just the competition that you face each game, especially coming into this season, because I'm assuming you sort of look at each team, and I think there's like 7 or 8 teams that have a good chance at making the national tournament if you really look at it. It's a very, very wide range of teams that could really do a lot of good things this upcoming season. How excited are you to play in Hockey East again this season? And what's sort of it like? What's it like sort of playing those high-end teams and players each weekend?
Yeah, it's special. I think even though we've been so close to the tournament, I think part of the reason is Hockey East teams just tend to knock each other out. It's hard to sweep a weekend in this league, right? A lot of really high-end teams or high-end players on every single team across the entire league. And I know a lot of my friends back home, they're all watching the NHL draft and they see all these guys going to BU, BC. They're like, wow, the league's going to be crazy next year. And I'm like, it's been crazy, man. It's good every year. So, it's obviously exciting to have a lot of talent in the league for next year. Yeah, like you just said, there's a lot of teams that are going to be really good. I think this might be one of the deeper years that I've seen since I've been here, to be honest. But that just excites me, to be honest with you. You know, to get the opportunity to play against all of these teams every weekend and have a chance to go against the best and beat the best is something that I've always wanted personally. And I know that it's something our team wants. So I think it's something we're all really looking forward to. And yeah, it's going to be an exciting year for sure.
Are there any games in particular that you're sort of looking forward to next season? That, like, I know the schedule came out. I'm assuming there's some games you circle on the calendar.
Yeah, I mean, not as much as last year. I think last year we had so many crazy games in marquee stadiums and facilities, especially with the Toscano just opening up too, where this year I think, you know, it might help actually just to kind of take out those distraction games that we had circled on our calendars. Even though someone might not say they did, it was just, it's in human nature not to have those big games circled. So to kind of take those arms out of the equation, I think it might actually help us just focus on the day-to-day of every week, just getting better over the course of the entire season to find our best in the playoff times, instead of trying to find our best in December for MSG or January for Fenway, and instead just really trusting the process throughout the entire season to get to the goal that we want.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like as a fan, you always circle on answers. I guess you can do that a little bit since you're not playing in the games. I feel like I'm looking forward to the BU or BC games because I feel like those are always very competitive. And I'm excited to see, you know, you guys go up against some of those top draft picks that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, those games will be fun, I'm sure. You know, they always have great teams anyways, both BU and BC. But to add the talent that, you know, they did, it's going to be those games are definitely going to be fun for sure.
Now, have you had the chance to sort of meet any of the new guys on the team yet? And how do you plan on building a connection with them both on and off the ice, especially since some of them might be your future line mates? I know Torvberg signed his pro contract last season. You guys really work well together. So I'm assuming you're going to have a new line mate. So how do you sort of build that chemistry with the new players? And have you had the chance to meet any of them? I know they haven't officially been announced, but obviously I think there's a lot of speculation that's true about who those new players will be.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I've got a chance to meet all of them, I believe. And they're all great, really great guys. You know, I had a chance to go back in the summer and meet them for a week and a half. And they all seem like really sharp kids and kids that are going to help our team a lot. You know, when guys come in here, I think it can be a little bit nerve-wracking. At least it was for me, about how can I produce right away? What can I do right away? And it's maybe not much about that as I thought it was. It's about kind of accepting the process of where you are right now and where you are going to be in 4 years. And don't get caught up necessarily on your results in the first couple of weeks as a young guy. Those are going to come over time. You know, these guys are all great players that are going to get results in this league. And I think just accepting kind of the process side of it at the start is so huge for them. And in terms of building chemistry with line mates, I mean, Coach Cav always does a good job kind of bringing lines in and explaining kind of roles to them in a way. And I think that's something we should continue to do as a team as well. And, you know, I kind of view line mates kind of very similar to everyone else on the team. You know, I'm just trying to be super positive. No, we can't expect as a line to go out and be perfect every single shift. So when guys on my line are getting frustrated, even for the course of a period, if we don't have a great period, it's okay, we're fine. Let's brush that off onto the next shift. You know, we don't have time in hockey to sit there and dwell and get upset, because that's when you can start stringing those bad shifts together, right? It's okay, let's flush it, move on to the next shift. That doesn't go well. That's fine. Do the same thing. Let's learn from what we could do better. Absolutely is a huge part of it. But once we have that main message, cut it, flush it, and let's move on to the next shift.
Let's transition now and talk about the beginning of your hockey career and sort of go back down memory lane with your time with UConn so far. So you're from Vancouver. Talk about growing up there and how did you start playing hockey?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know if it's just the religion of Canada in general, but I think I was on skates about as soon as I could walk from what my parents tell me. So kind of just started playing hockey all the time. My parents have some funny videos of me kind of waddling as a baby, listening to the national anthem at Canucks games, and just kind of dreaming about ending up as a professional hockey player at some point. So since then, I moved on, played at North Van Minor for 1 year, then the North Shore Winter Club, which is a very prestigious hockey club, and was very fortunate to spend the majority of my minor hockey days there. before transitioning into Major Midget and then the BCHL eventually, which is another great league that just happens to be right by my home. So I think I was very blessed and fortunate to play where I was, but to also play in an area that's so competitive in this hockey world where everyone is really pushing each other here all the time just because of the top tier talent that continues to come out of here.
Who was your favorite player growing up? I assume it was probably a Canuck.
Yeah, it's a hard one. You know, the hardest part is I want to say I love Jonathan Toews, but I just couldn't stand the Blackhawks when I was growing up because they kept knocking us out of the playoffs. But I think, you know, when you look at the Sedins and the way that they played the game, it's unlike anything that anyone's really ever seen. You know, their ability to just possess and hold on to pucks and tire out defenders and then score on them when they're tired was just so mechanical. It was almost robotic what they were able to do. And, you know, kind of picking up little things about just putting pucks in the right areas for their literal brother was so cool. The way they were able to have such amazing chemistry and intelligence on the ice. You know, they weren't the biggest guys. They weren't the fastest guys, didn't have the best shot, but they were just so intelligent within the game and had such special hockey IQ and chemistry. I think those two are just, yeah, outstanding players and people.
I got to ask you this. You play college in New England. I know a lot of your teammates are Bruins fans. Obviously, you know how big the Bruins and Canucks rivalry was back in the day. What is the chirping like between you and some of your teammates regarding that? Because I know it has to be brought up sometimes.
Oh, yeah. It might be brought up a little bit too much, to be honest, for my liking. But no, we actually went to a Canucks-Bruins game. I think it was 2 years ago. A bunch of us, a mix of the Canadians from the West Coast and a bunch of the Boston guys went down too and had a lot of fun. But yeah, no, the chirping is definitely there, and it's definitely just salt in the wound that's been there for the past 12 years anyways. But yeah, it was a tragic loss for the Canucks that night. But you know, hopefully we'll make it back one day.
Well, me and you are probably the same age. I assume you're probably a little bit older than I am, and I did not like those Canucks team at all. I remember when Burrows bit Bergeron's finger. Oh. I couldn't stand them. And my dad took me to the game the year after the Bruins won the Cup when that huge brawl took place in Marchand on Lowbridge, Sammy Salo. And it was one of the craziest games ever. And I just remember like despising the Canucks after that just because they were always trying to beat up the Bruins and stuff. And it was such a fun rivalry. And I feel like you're never going to see that today in the NHL just because it's not as physical as it used to be, but those games were so much fun to watch.
Yeah, you're right. No, man, that playoff series, when you look back on it, and you know, it's actually funny, we always watch, end up watching highlights of that playoff series. They always somehow come on between, you know, all of us somehow. And of course they come on, right? Like, goddamn. But some of the things that went down in that series where it was the Aaron Rome hit, or Nathan Horn, or the Mason Raymond injury in the corner, Tim Thomas cross-checking Henrik Sedin in front of the net. It was absolutely bizarre when you look back on it, but we were just so caught up in the moment that everyone just thought that was the new normal. So, you know, I wish that we could have a Stanley Cup series like that again, because I think that's one of the best ones of all time, for sure.
It's probably my favorite one. Obviously, I'm a bit biased as a Bruins fan, but the best Stanley Cup series in the last like 20 years, I would have to imagine, because the ones I've seen recently have been sort of like 5 or 4 game sweeps.
Yeah, no, you're right. That one, there was just something different about it too, about the West Coast versus East Coast. Like, it was, that one just ran way too deep. Canucks were looking for their first cup, and I think there was just so much energy kind of throughout both teams on both sides that it just created one of the most beautiful hockey series of all time.
Now, before UConn, like you mentioned, you played in the BCHL for the Salmon Arm Silverbacks. That's a great name. And the Surrey Eagles. Talk about your experience in the BCHL and how it's sort of helped prepare you for college hockey. And do you sort of have like a favorite memory in that league when you sort of look back on it today?
Yeah, I mean, I played in Salmon Arm. To be honest, I didn't think I was going to make the team the rookie year I ended up playing. But, you know, kind of had a great camp, and the coaches, they had a brand new coaching staff that came in, and they really liked me and liked my game and brought me on kind of just as a younger guy. And they're like, you might not play every night at the start, but we really like where you could be by the end of the year. And I said, okay, yeah, I can do that. It was my last year of high school. So I don't know if you know anything about Salmon Arm, but I don't think there's more than 16,000 people in the town. It's a very small town where the Silverbacks are kind of at the center of it. And that was really cool. It was cool to experience that, to kind of be, you know, a huge part of this community, and have a community like that really embrace you with tremendous billet families and great organization was really cool. And, you know, it was unfortunate that I ended up getting traded from there, but, you know, that's business. Hockey's a business kind of thing now. So I ended up getting moved from there. Appreciate my time. The coaches, teammates were unbelievable. You know, I'm friends for life from there still today. Then I ended up getting traded to Surrey my 19-year-old year when I was still uncommitted. I had a couple of talks with other universities, but nothing super serious at the time. And Surrey the year before, I think, had 6 wins in 63 games, if I'm not mistaken. It really was not, it wasn't a pretty team. You know, they were not good. They cleaned house completely, brand new coaching staff. They only had, I think it was one or two kids left, and it was a full new team after that. So we kind of came in, you know, the culture was still lingering a little bit. It was a lot of uncertainty just because of the year before and everything that happened, kind of full cleaning house that off season. No one was really sure how good we were going to be. You know, everyone obviously has aspirations, but, you know, we didn't know. And, you know, we didn't have a great start to the season at all. I think we were last in our division right before Christmas. And, you know, I remember just being really down in the dumps. You know, I didn't have a commitment at the time. And I was just like, damn, this isn't good. Like, this sucks right now. And they ended up making a trade, trading away our captain at the time, Cody Chavon, who's unbelievable, one of my favorite captains I've had, great guy. But we just needed a change up, you know, right? It's when something's not going like that, they needed a switch up for something to either to bring some energy or do anything. So we traded away Cody and Cam Keith, our coach, one of my favorite coaches of all time, you know, unbelievable. If anyone ever has the opportunity to go play for Coach Keith in Surrey, I'd recommend it in a heartbeat. For this reason, he brought in Christophe Tellier, who's on Quinnipiac, who was my line mate at the time. And he brought in him and I into his office. And, you know, he said, Huddy, you're going to be the captain of this team. And, you know, tells you're going to be is, you know, you're going to continue to be an assistant, but it's like a 1A, 1B thing, which is how we're going to do this. And he said, this is going to be your guys' team now. I'm here to have your guys' back, whatever you guys say or want to do. I'm open to all ideas, whatever you guys think in terms of systems, mentality, pregame speeches, warmups, everything. But I want you guys to take accountability for this team and really try and lead us to the promised land. I think I remember looking at Tellier kind of like, what? It's like, can we do this at 19? We're going to run a full team of guys right now. And that's exactly what we did, man. It was really cool, the kind of the way that we were able to grasp kind of the minds and the mentality of everyone in the team. Just, I think, from caring about them and being positive with them, that they did the same thing. And it's like, we're going to work for you. Cool. I'm going to reciprocate that right back. And it was so cool and almost contagious how it just spread around the room of everyone was taking accountability for each other's actions. And then we just had this most genuine, great coach I've ever had, Cam Keith, there to support us all right behind. And I think we were last in the division at December and ended up getting to, I can't remember if it was, I think we got into third right before playoff time and then ended up beating the Chilliwack Chiefs in a playoff series right before COVID hit, a team absolutely loaded with commitments and draft picks. I know Nikita Nesterenko kind of headlined that team, who's obviously a great player at BC for a couple of years. Cooper Moore, who was an unbelievable defenseman. I believe he's going to Quinnipiac this year. They had Karan, who's going to Boston University as their goalie. So if you kind of look at our team, it was almost like a team full of misfits is kind of how I would describe it, that were hand-picked from everywhere. And the way we were able to come together behind Cam and just through really positive leadership and uplifting everyone at the same time was so cool.
Now, talk about your recruiting process with UConn and what sort of made you want to go there versus the schools you might have looked at. Because like you were mentioning, you sort of had to deal with a lot of challenges during your junior career. So how did they sort of find you, and how did that sort of connection happen between you and, I'm assuming, Joe Pereira, because he was the one that recruited out there?
Yeah, I think it was actually Heltz was my first conversation with UConn was with Coach Heltz. But yeah, it was actually kind of just crazy. I think this is, you know, it's actually kind of funny how things just work out, right? It's the only hat trick of my junior career happened at the game where I believe it was Helt that was there, right? My only hat trick in my junior career. And, you know, he talked to me after the game saying, you know, we really like you. We'd love to have you out on campus sometime soon. And at the time, I had a couple of conversations with other schools before that where I knew things were kind of starting to heat up a little bit, kind of down the stretch, the second half of my year in Surrey when we were starting to play really well. Teams were kind of starting to come and I was like, okay, this could happen pretty fast because, you know, it's my 19-year-old year. If I want to leave next year, teams are going to want, you know, stuff done really soon. So right after that, we organized a trip with UConn super quick. And at the time, Carter Berger, who lives 5 minutes away from me, was at the school. So I think, you know, having him there as someone that I could kind of rely on, who had been there before, was super crucial in the recruiting process. And I know that helped make my decision a lot easier, but it was kind of just a feeling, man. When I got on campus, drove through it the first time without stopping looking around, like, yeah, like I could see myself here. You know, it's a really cool campus. You know, at the time, obviously they were starting to talk about building a new rink too, the Toscano. I think JP might have lied to a few of us saying it was going to be ready our sophomore year, but we'll let it slide with that one. We got it for our junior year, so that's okay. But no, there was a lot of excitement about it being a new up and coming program too, which is, you know, something that I just experienced in Surrey the year before, right? Kind of turning a team around and getting it to that next level. So having this same idea and thought process about trying to take a team to that next level was something that really stood out to me and something that I'm so glad that I ended up taking up on.
Now, what was like sort of the biggest adjustment you had to make to college hockey as a freshman?
That's a great question. I would say, you know, it's a lot more of a physical game than in the BCHL. BCHL does play, there's a lot of really good defenders that come out of that league, but there's a lot of offense that gets played in that league as well. And I think coming to college where every game has so much on the line, defense tends to just kind of amp up a little bit all over. So the physicality side of it was definitely a bit of an adjustment, but I also think that kind of has helped my game over 3 years too, kind of learning how to deal with taking little bumps here and there and almost using them to your advantage has been something that's actually been able to help me.
Especially at Freitas the first year, because the smaller ice surface, I feel like it was more physical. I'm assuming, do you remember the Cale Howarth hit against BU where he like lit that guy up? I know he got suspended for it, but that was one of the biggest hits I've ever seen.
Yeah, there was that one, and there was Adam Karaschik absolutely destroyed UMass. I was angling him up the wall on the left, and then all of a sudden, it's just like a blur that goes right by my head, and I'm just like, what just happened? And yeah, Schick's had some huge hits for us that year, actually. That was, the Freitas definitely played into our physical brand that year, for sure.
Yeah, Adam could eat pucks for days, it feels like. I think he had like almost like 40 block shots that season or something like that.
I wouldn't have been surprised. It's kind of that he's just like a puck magnet, kind of is what we call it. They just kind of seem to find him all over him and Ryan Wheeler. Shout out Ryan Wheeler. He's another puck magnet. He gets them in practice, though, which is tough. Those are
always tough. Talk a little about your freshman year. Obviously, it was the pandemic year where you guys played all your home games at Freitas with no fans. But sort of how did you handle the challenge of dealing with all the restrictions that year? Because obviously, you guys didn't know who you were going to play until like that Tuesday of that week. And then you guys had a really tough playoff game against Providence where you got blew out. And I'm sort of curious if you sort of used that game as motivation for your sophomore year, because it seemed like that was the case, the way you guys sort of went through that season. But just talk a little about your freshman year and sort of what you took away from that season.
Yeah, I mean, that was a bit of a weird year just because of everything that was going on. But I think having such a great group of guys kind of in the locker room where we could rely on each other was so important, right? Like I just mentioned Karaschik, you know, Zach Robbins, Brian Regali, Wheels, you know, just such an unbelievable group of guys, right? That were kind of older where this was, you know, could have been their last year and it's a COVID year. So them kind of, you know, pushing us and motivating us, like, this is it, right? Like it goes by fast. This is our last year. And kind of having that in the back of our minds really kind of helped us as a freshman class, I feel like, want to be there and play for them at the time. And looking back on it, I mean, that Providence game was tough. It was weird every week, kind of. You never really knew what was going to happen, what the outcomes were, the games were going to be, or who you were playing, who was going to be in, who was going to be out. It was always wild. And, you know, playing at the Freitas too, with very minimal fan bases there, kind of walking out of the same tunnel, it was kind of weird. And, you know, losing that first playoff game, I think, was a little bit of a gut check for us about Hockey East, because I think we were making strides as a program. But we didn't quite have that next step, right? We didn't make it to the next level of the playoffs ever. It was always one and done before that. So I think, you know, after that season as a freshman class, anyways, I remember, you know, talking to the guys like this is playoffs are a different animal in this league. Okay. And they're like, yeah, absolutely. Now we know, right? So it was a great learning point for us.
Yeah. I remember talking to Artem Schlein after that Providence game. He said it was unfortunate the way it was because you guys played Providence the last game of the season to get home ice. And then you had to play him again. He said it's so hard to beat a team two times in a row. So he said it was a little bit unfortunate how it worked out, but he said that that game really motivated you guys to sort of know what it's like to play in the playoffs, especially for your class with Torvberg, yourself, him, obviously at the time. And I just thought it was a pretty interesting perspective when I remember him telling me that.
Yeah, no, Artie's 100% right there. It's so hard to win twice in a row. And, you know, we actually spanked them the week before too, right? So they definitely came in with a little bit more jam, just having from remembered that week before too.
Yeah, Zach Robbins, one of the most underrated UConn players of all time. Shout out to him. Doesn't get enough love. And I heard Cale Howarth is the funniest hockey player of all time. I'm assuming you would agree with on that.
Yeah, no, I love Cale. He was one of my better friends. He helped me so much that freshman year, kind of showing me the ropes. And yeah, he's one of the funniest hockey players of all time. Yeah, shout out Zach Robbins. So underrated. So fun. I had a lot of fun playing with him and Regali for the first couple games of that freshman year. Those guys are two great guys and great hockey players that both don't get enough love either.
Now, during your sophomore year, your team went on a run to the TD Garden and made it to the Hockey's Championship. Talk about that run, specifically the games against BU and Northeastern, because as a fan, those are probably the best UConn games I've ever been to. But it seemed like you guys were so dialed in and having so much fun playing those games. I just want to ask your perspective on those two games and sort of what it meant to yourself and the program.
Yeah, I think, you know, the reason why we had success in those games is because it meant everything to us. You know, we had such an old team that year with guys who have been around and just never got over that hump. And I think at that point they looked around and said, wow, like now we have the supporting cast, right? Like for, you know, to have such strong depth the year that we did make that run, it was like, okay, we can do it this year. And I think that sense of confidence mixed with desperation at the same time just allowed us to go out and play at our best consistently for throughout that playoff run. And obviously, you know, those two wins, the first one was huge. And then, you know, the second one, I think that year we kind of had Northeastern's number, having an old team that played a really defensive style, matched up really well against, you know, their kind of run and gun young offensive team at the time. And even though they had Devin Levi, we knew that was going to be our biggest challenge, was getting it by him. And, you know, he had our number a few times during that year. I remember having some huge shot totals against him where we just couldn't get it by him. So I think once we kind of cracked him, it was like, okay, now we can take these guys and go two in a row here.
Yeah. Especially since I don't know if you can say it, but I feel like you guys got screwed over that game when Carter had the goalie interference. And
yeah, that's
I feel like you guys got screwed over a little bit in that game. So it's definitely a good revenge moment for sure.
Yeah. That one's a weird one still. I still think about that goalie interference one. And I just, that one quite doesn't make sense to me. But
I think they apologized to Cav after it because I think they messed up, if I'm not mistaken. Really? I remember him saying
I can't remember exactly. But I know we got the last laugh that season, so I'm not going to complain about it.
Unfortunately, that season came to a very sad ending when you guys lost in overtime against UMass. How did you emotionally handle that game, especially being on the ice for that goal, but also knowing that it was the end of a lot of players' collegiate careers that were some of your good teammates? I know that was Yakim's last game, Carter and Johnny, Darian. I feel like that really what made it hurt more for me was knowing that you'll never see those guys play for a UConn jersey again. But I'm just curious how you sort of emotionally handled that loss too, so you have to dwell on that throughout the entire offseason.
Yeah, no, it definitely, might have been the worst loss I've had kind of in my whole hockey career, to be honest. You know, growing with those guys for 2 years and all they did for me as a person and as a player, you know, all I wanted was to win it for them, for each other. And, you know, to come up just short in overtime against an unbelievable team, that UMass team was really high end, great team top to bottom, but to come up just short, you know, I remember we had a 2-on-1 that went across the crease out the other side and, you know, some great chances in that game to win it too, in a game, in a championship game where both teams are tired from the day before. And it was just a game of will. You knew once it went to overtime, it was anyone's game. And it's going to be a bounce that's going to do it. And of course, the goal goes off Jakob's shoulder, floats in the air, and goes in. So it was tragic. It really was. But, you know, I think having that experience now for me going into this last year, and for all of us guys kind of that are leaning towards the end of our collegiate career, I think it's something that will benefit us this year. You know, it's something that I know that Harry, Flinney, Cappy, Spetsy, those guys have not forgot about that. And it's something that we're going to take with us into this year too, and hope that we can come out on the other end of that overtime goal this time.
Yeah, just you think of, I feel like you think about the chances of what could have been. If I remember correctly, Jakob had a chance where it just went right by Murray's shoulder, and if it just was a few inches towards the left, it would have went in the net.
Yeah,
and just with that, I love that the UMass UConn games. I feel like that's sort of a good rivalry for your team. I don't know if you would consider them your biggest rival, but I always feel like when you guys play each other, it's always a fun game.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're, you know, Coach Carvel runs an unbelievable program over there, and you know, this year they obviously didn't have as strong of a roster, but you know, they still play such a great style. And being able to kind of have that UConn versus UMass kind of rivalry is always something that's kind of in the back of your minds. Mm-hmm. And you know, they usually have a pretty good student base out there that comes out. And yeah, we have a lot of fun playing those guys. They're definitely a rival for us, for sure. You know, I don't know if they stand out necessarily compared to, I wouldn't say anyone necessarily stands out dramatically towards anyone else in Hockey East. I don't really like any other teams in the league, to be honest. But the UMass UConn games, yeah, they've all been really fun.
Now, in your junior year, you got to play in some fun places. Like you mentioned, you played at MSG and Fenway Park. What was it like playing those games and just being a part of that atmosphere? And sort of what did you take away from those experiences? I know both those games didn't go your way, especially the MSG game, but I'm assuming you'll still appreciate sort of getting the chance to play at Fenway Park, because who knows if that opportunity will ever happen again.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, it was obviously super cool experience for not only me, for my family, friends that were able to come out and kind of watch those games. It was super cool experience. You know, Fenway Park, I've obviously watched some baseball games there, and I've never been down in the dugout. I've never played outdoors even in my life before that. So that was a really cool experience. You know, it's kind of weird. Once you have one shift in you in both those games, it's kind of like any other game, essentially. But the buildup, mm-hmm. the start of the game, the warm-ups, those, it's kind of when, you know, you look around and you, okay, I can appreciate this. But usually come game time, it's kind of just like any other game. Of course, except in that MSG game when they scored two in the first 30 seconds or whatever it was. That was a kind of a little bit of a shocker for us as a team. But yeah, those two games and experiences are something I'm definitely going to take with me for the rest of my life, just because, like you said, you know, what are the chances that you're going to play in there again? You know, obviously the dream is to end up playing professionally in the NHL and, you know, playing in MSG, which that would mean, but you know, you never need that. So I definitely can't take either of those for granted. Super special moments for myself and my family and the people around me, for sure.
Yeah. That MSG game, it was, the experience to go to New York was a ton of fun, but I was like one of the only UConn fans at that game. And I don't know if you felt this way, but I thought that was the most hostile crowd I've ever been a part of. And like, yeah. I was getting chirped. It was a tough, tough game for yours truly. And
yeah,
that was just, I remember being the most hostile crowd ever. I'm like, wow, like this is crazy.
Yeah, no, I think I actually had a lot of family at that game too. And you know, I remember them getting into like some Cornell fans were going at them.
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. They're mean fans. I don't know why.
Yeah. But I just remember kind of the weird thing for us. I remember going into the game was, you know, we heard that UConn has a really strong fan base in New York, and that UConn had sold over 7,000 tickets and there was going to be 7,000 UConn fans there. And then we kind of come out for warm up and it's like, where are they?
Yeah.
It's all red everywhere. And I'm like, well, maybe they're still at the bar and they're coming late. Like, I don't know what's going on here. And then we come up for the actual game and it is literally a sea of red. And I'm like, did they just spread us out all over the map? Like, what is going on here? Which was what actually kind of did happen.
Yeah.
They spread us out everywhere, which was really Bush League. But no, I'll remember. Yeah. After that first goal, that was one of the loudest I've ever heard an arena playing in my entire life. So that was, yeah, to say hostile might be honestly an understatement. They were over the top almost. But those atmospheres are fun to play in too at the same time. Of course, it didn't end up going right for us that night, but if it did, there would have been nothing I would have loved more than quieting that crowd down.
Oh yeah, for sure. I was holding the ground for you guys though. Don't worry, in the stands.
Yeah, we needed some more of that out there.
But I remember Mark Yakum. It was a game against UMass, and the UMass crowd was chirping Darian the entire night. Darian had his best game, and then when Mark scored that go-ahead goal to pretty much seal up the game, when he shushed the crowd and everyone was leaving, that was a good celebration. So those are definitely fun when you get to silence the crowd like that.
Oh, one of the favorite things Coach Cav always talks about too. When you're playing on the road, I love playing on the road. I love those atmospheres, those hostile environments. But seeing the home crowds, fans kind of walk up the aisles at the end of the game with a minute left or 30 seconds left, when you got one in the bag, those ones tend to feel a little bit better for some reason than the ones at home. It's just going on the road in their place and wrecking those people's nights always feels good for some reason.
Now, let's do talk about your home games, because you guys opened up the new rink this past season. Just talk about, as a player, what it's like playing at Toscano and just sort of the new energy that the rink has, because I really enjoyed the student section. And obviously for that first game, that was another memorable moment as a UConn fan for me, because just how loud the building was. It was just a pretty cool environment to be a part of.
Oh, it's special, to be honest, man. It's the only way I could describe it, We love playing at XL. We have a great base of true hockey fans and school fans in Hartford that, come out and have been supporting this program for 10 years at that arena, right? But being able to have that rink on campus and, really appreciate Dan Toscano. And, I got to know his son Jeremy really well kind of over the past 2 years, which is just unbelievable family. And, we're so thankful to them that they're giving us an opportunity to play on campus in front of students. And, yeah, we had a lot of fun playing in that rink. We had a decent amount of success there. Of course, we don't win the home opener, but after that, we had a lot of success in that rink. And it's something I think we can take into next year too, is, it's a little bit of a tighter barn than kind of some other rinks in college. And I think that benefits the way we play quite a bit. And yeah, it was so much fun. There was a couple of games. It was that one, the students only game was obviously super cool. And being able to have that facility there too, just for day-to-day use, man, it's something I wish I had for full 4 years, but I'm very grateful that I've got to have it for these past kind of that past year kind of down the stretch there.
Yeah, I saw that they just finished construction and they put the hockey's like team flags on.
They got them up now.
Cool and finished now, which I'm excited to see what that looks like. And talk a little bit more about that student only game, because obviously one of the biggest moments with the new rink was when you scored the first OT winner against Alaska Anchorage. Just talk about that goal and just the energy the crowd had after you celebrated, because it was a sort of a weird goal where it hit the goalie and it sort of bounced it in. And I'm assuming it probably felt like it forever for it to actually go in the net. But just talk about sort of that moment for you, because I think that's probably one of those moments in your career to sort of look back on, like, that's pretty cool.
Oh man, yeah, that was special to kind of get those. You never everyone dreams of kind of scoring those kind of goals in those moments. But once you do in reality, it's obviously the initial feeling you get is awesome, right? Of course, that was a tough game for us as a team. Alaska, they came to play that night. They were a good team that I think maybe didn't get enough credit. They played some tough opponents and they kind of held their own against a lot of tough teams, and their goalie had an exceptional night that night. They came back on a slate, and Raiho, that's Twerberg, I call him Raiho. Raiho and I always kind of had this fun overtime connection, where I kind of like to bring that positive energy back on their boards, where, even though we would wait for Coach Cad to say, Raiho, how do you going? It's like, I'm looking at him, we kind of know, we're going here, let's go. We've practiced together all the time, 3-on-3. We had such good chemistry where we kind of, I'm trying to set up Raiho on this crazy drop back pass to get him just flying up the zone. And this time I think we got a quick turnover and he turns on the Jets. And I'm like, he's going to find me. I know he's going to find me. He always finds me here. And I think it was one of the hardest passes I've ever received, but it was the absolute laser right on my tape. And, something that I've kind of worked on over the last 2 years. is just try and get the puck off your stick quick. You know, it doesn't even have to be the hardest shot or the most accurate in the world. But, you know, if you can put it in a great area and get it off your stick fast, it's so hard for goalies to track the puck as they're moving side to side compared to when they're completely set and ready. So kind of just having that in the back of my mind, I just got a floater off. It was not a pretty one at all. But, you know, kind of once that went in, and I think that might have been one of the loudest I've ever heard that barn too. That was really cool. And kind of, I remember kind of walking out of the rink with having a couple students being like, "Oh, you're Hudson. Like that was a great game. You know, great goals at the end." And, you know, first time in my college career that that's happened, right? Of course, is you get a new rink on campus, have a student only game, and to get kind of the recognition from those people, the students at the school, that felt really cool. I'm just going to be honest with you. It was a really cool experience for myself and for our team to get the win in that game. And hopefully we're going to have a lot more moments like that in this upcoming season.
Yeah, especially at a school like UConn, where you have so many big time athletes, you know, like Paige Beckers, and obviously with some of the men's basketball players like Carabin, you know, who just won a national championship, to sort of be in that group must be something really special.
Yeah, no, it's cool, right? I mean, UConn is a huge promoter of just excellence throughout all their athletic programs. So we're kind of trying to follow right behind the basketball team. You know, they obviously won a national championship this last year. We have the same goal in mind going into this next year, right? Is every team on campus is usually a really good team in terms of whatever league they play in. They usually kind of have a lot of success. Typically, UConn just finds a way. So, you know, to be a part of that school and to kind of learn from the culture and the environment of everyone there has been special, man. I wouldn't have traded it for the world. So, yeah, it's so cool to be a part of such a cool school that shoots for excellence continuously.
They had a tough game against UMass Lowell where, let's be honest, Griegels really stole that game for the Riverhawks. How motivated is your team after that game? And what did you take away from that loss? Because I feel like those are the toughest games where you know you were the better team. But as Coach Kapp says, sometimes it should be called goalie, not hockey, because sometimes the goalie can just steal a game from you like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was a hard one. I mean, credit to them. You know, they played good behind, in front of Grigo too, but he obviously had an exceptional game, that one. And I mean, I think that game just kind of really emulated almost our season as a whole, kind of, right? Where it's, you know, even though we had this young team, we were still right there, right? We're, you know, I don't know if at the start of the year anyone really expected us to do anything crazy with all of these young guys that came in. And, you know, behind the back of Amonte and Canal as leaders and old veterans on our team, Pearson as well, we found a way, you know. And I think down the stretch, we kind of lost it a little bit. You know, we were dealing with a little bit of injuries and stuff and such, but, you know, we kind of just didn't have that finish down the stretch that we needed to. And I think that just showed in that game a little bit. And as a team, you know, or personally, and as a team, you learn, you know, a tough lesson about college athletics is you have a full season of 32 games, but it can be over just like that. One game playoffs, it's everything all in one game. And, you know, I remember my freshman year, we talked about Providence earlier, right? And it's one game, we got blown out that game. And it's like, wait, there's no way. Like, that's it. Like, you don't even get a chance to rebuttal. There's nothing. And there isn't. There's no rebuttal. It's one game, you're done. So I think, you know, it was a good, tough lesson for us to learn this year, as bad as that is to say. But I think it will reap benefits for us for this next year, kind of learning just how important that playoff game is. I think that game we did come out, we started a little bit slow, I remember. So coming out and being ready to go right from the jump, because like you said, you know, you got to get by the goalie early, right? Otherwise that guy could just steal a game from you. So being ready to go for a full 60 minutes in a hockey's playoff game was something that I'm happy that we all have learned now moving into next year for sure.
Now, I think UConn's one of the best teams in Hockey East. I don't care if people think I'm biased. I really believe that. And I always feel like the conference and everyone really underrates you guys, because I'm convinced next coach's poll that comes out, you guys will not be probably the team that's voted in first place. So I just want to ask, do does your team sort of embrace that underdog role? And what's it like sort of proving people wrong? Because like you mentioned last year, not really many people thought you guys were going to do anything. And you guys ended up being a top 20 ranked team. And honestly, if you guys got a few more wins, you would have been in the national tournament. So,
yeah, no, I think we live for it now. We, you know, we're used to it, but we embrace it completely. It's like, you want to put us down here, you know, okay, we'll see you. We'll see you in the season. We'll see how that's going to go. So the continuous, you know, disrespect we get from other programs is something I think we're used to, but something we've embraced completely as a program where, you know, we don't really care, honestly, about your preseason rankings. If anything, we're just going to use it as motivation wherever you put us. We truly believe as a team that we should be first in those rankings. And we don't really care where you have us, but our goal in our room is to be at the top of the league every single year. And, you know, I think kind of having that chip on your shoulder where people disrespect you has kind of allowed us to start seasons pretty well. Where, you know, this last year we had a great start to the year. I think we got up to like sixth, I believe, was our highest ranking at one point. And, you know, I think that does play a role in it, having kind of that early chip on your shoulder right away where it's, okay, these guys are disrespecting us. We do not watch us play. Like, look at the guys we have on our team, you know, like Bradley Wood, all these crazy guys that are unbelievable hockey players. And, you know, the disrespect that comes along with it is something that we definitely embrace as a team.
I did want to get your thoughts on Matthew Wood being drafted in the first round this past summer. How cool was it to see that? Obviously, he's now the highest drafted UConn player in program history, and I think it's sort of a testament to the growth that you guys are having.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Woody's an unbelievable hockey player, man. He's one of the best I've ever been on the ice with. His ability to hold on the pucks and create out of almost nothing is something that is very rare, which is why he went in the first round. You know, I had him, I'm biased too, but I thought he was gonna go even higher than he did. But man, yeah, I know I got to play with him down the second half of last year, kind of when we threw in a little bit of a lineup change, and we built some really good chemistry really fast, which I don't think is too difficult with that guy, man. I think he sees the game so well, and obviously his shot is second to none in our conference. So yeah, he's one of the best players I've ever been on the ice with, and I'm just super fortunate that he came to UConn and I've been able to, you know, become really good friends with him.
Is it crazy seeing him do all that stuff as a 17-year-old? Like, that's probably like the most insane part about the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing is I think you become kind of used to it almost. Yeah. You know, I see it so much in practice and throughout the season where, you know, he makes a crazy play and it's, you almost have to, you know, you almost don't realize until you go back and sit on the bench. And then it's like, whoa, that was actually disgusting, Woody. But yeah, no, he does that stuff very consistently on the offensive end where you become almost blind to it. But it's really special to watch him do that at that age last year.
Yeah, I think my favorite Woody moment was either the first goal he scored against Vermont, where it's just a one-timer and like, that's sort of his welcome to college hockey moment.
Yeah.
Or when he almost got the Michigan against UMass. And even though he missed it, he created a play and Pearson like got a really good goal off that. Those are the two moments where it really showed me how special of a player he was.
Yeah, I think it's actually funny if he scored another power play goal that first weekend in Vermont. And I remember just going behind the net and like throwing my hands in the air because I'm just like, this is this guy's first weekend in college. I remember when he scored that one timer in the first game. I can't remember if it was in the same game or the second game, but I remember him just absolutely ripping a snapshot like far south. And I was like right by the net at the time. And I just remember throwing my hands in the air, almost sellying more than he sellied because I was so happy that he was a part of our team and program.
I always like getting a Coach Cav story, but one I want to get from you, because I think you were on the bench when this happened, was when Chase Bradley got the empty net goal against BU. What was your reaction when you saw Cav banging on the glass when he finally got his first postseason win as a coach? Is there any backstory to it? Because I feel like he's sort of nonchalant about it and doesn't like sort of talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there was any crazy backstory to it. I think there was a lot of passion involved.
Yeah.
He's put in a lot of work to this program and to this school. And he hasn't been able to reap the results. And to see that happen with that group too, which was an older group who went through a lot of ups and downs with Coach Cav during their time there, to see that, see them be rewarded, I think was just emotions took over him. And I think I was the first one to give him a fist bump after I saw him do that.
Yeah.
But no, to have a coach like that who puts it all on the line for us is, it was really special. It was special for our whole team and program. And, you know, I'm sure he's super humble about it, but I'm sure he felt special about that win too. And of course, you know, in the moment, you know, your sights quickly change to, okay, but now we're going to the Garden. We got bigger things in mind. But when you look back on it from above, I think it was really cool for everyone involved, just that game.
I don't know if you remember this, but when Gackholm got the empty net at the Garden, the Northeaster game, the entire bench goes crazy. And I just remember Cav like, settle down. It's like one of the funniest clips ever.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of a coach's job. They got to keep us under control. But that game, I think, was also such an emotional game. I remember, you know, we talk about rivalries. We had a big one with Northeastern that year. I know those older guys just couldn't stand those younger offensive guys in Northeastern and just go to war with them every night. I remember like one of the craziest things is like, I didn't see Turnbull really hit a lot the whole season.
Oh, he had two big hits against and like Novak, who's like one of the biggest players in hockey.
Yeah. And he drilled them. And then Jordan Harris, who's an unbelievable hockey player and defenseman, one of the super shifty too, just coming up the middle, and Turnbull just stands him up right on the blue line, like, hard. And I know how strong Turnbull is from being around, but I've never seen it in action like that before. And that was almost crazier than when we scored the empty netter, because I'm like looking up and down the bench like going crazy. that was such a cool moment too, that game.
I feel like there's probably some anger because he missed that big breakaway too.
Yes he did. That definitely would have pissed him off for sure. Those things get him going a little bit. So yeah.
Well, before we end this interview, Hudson, do you have any message to any of the IceBus fans listening to this episode? I know myself, really looking forward to the season starting, even though most fans probably can't make it to that Colgate series. I know the Holy Cross series is going to be a lot of fun to sort of see you guys back on the ice in person. So do you have any message to any of us for the upcoming season and what we can expect from you guys?
Yeah, no, I mean, you should expect the best. I think, you know, we all train and work hard in the off season to come back at our best every year. And when I look kind of up and down the room now, it's go time. You know, we have one of the best teams, if not the best team skill wise that we've had since we've been here, with a lot of new guys coming in with really high ceilings and a lot of guys coming back that should take an even farther jump than they have already. So I think it has a really good chance to be a super special year for this program. And, you know, we're really thankful for you guys coming out and supporting us all the time, and, you know, continue to pack the Toscano, and we'll have your guys back out there for sure.
Any shout outs you want to give to any of your teammates, family members, and friends? And who should we have on the podcast next? I would like to do one more interview before the season begins. I know we don't typically do interviews, but I'd like to do one more if that's the case.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, I have so many people in my life, man, that have come in and out. I remember, you know, kind of just throughout this interview, I shared, you know, Cam Keith as an unbelievable coach. Ryan Kerr is just a great trainer. And I'm going to kind of leave the friends and family out of it just because there's so many. And they've all played such a pivotal role, and they know who they are. In terms of next, you know, I think a funny character on the team that, you know, should have a really good chance to be a huge part of our team for this next year is Jake Black. You know, I think he's someone who kind of found his game down the stretch there that, you know, surprised a lot of people, almost saying this guy can play, and he can play this level consistently and for a long time and have a lot of success. So that'd be someone that I would look at to have on here. I'd love to hear kind of what he has to say about these questions too.
Definitely reach out and see what he has to say. How are you going to remember all the Jakes? Jake Lalou, Jake Richard, Jake Black.
It's kind of weird, man. Almost, we got so many Jakes kind of going through our team, but no, we don't usually call anyone by their first name. So it's, yeah, we'll figure out names. The weirdest one is, like, you know, we usually go last names, right? So, but now we have two Flynns. That's kind of a little bit of a curve at some point too. So yeah, we're going to have to figure some things out with that for sure. But yeah, we'll be all right.
Well, thank you so much, Hudson, for taking time out of your day and coming on the podcast. I really appreciate you doing that. I enjoyed our conversation today. It was fun getting to look back on some fun UConn hockey moments. And I can't wait to see you guys play in person. I love going to as many games as I can. And obviously, you see me during the warmups watching you guys do that, which is always a lot of fun. So can't wait to do that against Holy Cross. That should be a good time. And yeah, thank you so much for doing this. I enjoyed our conversation today.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Matthew. I appreciate it, man. Anytime. You know, we had a lot of fun today, kind of talking about reliving some old good memories too at the same time, and looking forward to next year tremendously. It should be a great year for us.
One step forward and another back. I will never try to fool you. I'm one heartbeat away from going mad. Girl, when you look like that, closer, closer, I'ma get closer to you, yeah.